true motives of the war on Iraq. And I know, at least in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I imagine around the country, this has been a source of some debate. Imagine that, disagreement on the left. But it's an important debate, because if we don't fully understand or come to some kind of agreement on the motives about this war, it becomes difficult to organize a proper response. And I know in our area we're hearing it's all about empire, it's all about oil, it's all about Israel, it's all about all three of the above, it's two out of three, it's column A, column C, etc. We're going to try to get through some of this fog of disagreement this morning. I think we'll have a very lively discussion here. Just quickly, I'm sure you're familiar with all three of our speakers, but by way of introduction, in alphabetical order, Anthony Arnov is the editor of Iraq Under Siege. For those of us who are engaged in the anti-sanctions movement, this was probably the essential resource that we had. It's a wonderful book. Also editor of Terrorism and War. He's a former editor and publisher with South End Press, currently working as a freelance writer and editor in Brooklyn. He's a member of the International Socialist Organization and the National Writers Union. By agreement of the speakers themselves, we'll hear from Anthony, then Dilip, and then Larry. So, Anthony, take it away.
So I want to thank Paul for that very kind introduction. I was privileged last night to hear Dilip Piro's 15. Speech, in which he laid out the stated justifications for the invasion of Iraq. And I think he was very right to point out that what we have just witnessed was not a war, but an invasion followed by an occupation. And he said that the way that the Bush administration publicly justified the invasion was what he called TWT. T for terrorism, W for weapons, and another T for tyranny. These were the stated rationale that we heard over and over again from politicians, pundits, and that were given in the media to explain why we needed to attack Iraq. So terrorism, the idea was that there was a link between Saddam Hussein, the Iraqi government, and al-Qaeda. And in fact, a majority of people in this country were led by the propaganda system to believe that there was a direct connection between Saddam Hussein and the attacks of September 11th, 2001. Weapons, we were led to believe that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction and was capable of deploying them. There were headlines about Iraq being minutes away from being able to attack its enemies, and that despite the years of sanctions, despite the years of investigations, despite the lack of any evidence that Iraq had such a program, any number of pretexts were put forward. The connection with Niger, the import of uranium, copper tubing, and so on. And then, of course, the tyranny of the dictatorship in Iraq. And as Dilip reminded us last night, of course, many of the crimes that were trotted out to justify why we had to go to war against this brutal dictator happened at a time when this brutal dictator was an ally and friend of the United States, when people like Donald Rumsfeld were going off to Baghdad to have meetings with Saddam Hussein, and in fact to advise him about how he could improve his image in the U.S. media, as well as, of course, supplying him with political intelligence, weapons, funding, logistical support in his war with Iran, and covering up the human rights abuses, particularly the abuses against the Kurdish population, such as the Halabja massacre, which were then used to explain why we have to depose this brutal dictator. So it's now clear that all of the stated rationale for the war, TWT, have been discredited. And in fact, not just discredited by the anti-war movement, I think we were very clear all along that none of these arguments carried any weight, but they've become publicly discredited. So the point that there's a political crisis for Washington, D.C., every one of the claims is now understood by a large section of the population to not be true. No weapons of mass destruction found. The link with al-Qaeda didn't exist. There's been there's no smoking gun, as Dilip reminded us. And in fact, now there is a connection between Iraq and al-Qaeda, which is that the war has increased al-Qaeda's ability to recruit, and it's created conditions in which some people organizing, you know, loosely in some form of affiliation with al-Qaeda now can use the resistance in Iraq as a way of advancing their own agenda. And then finally, tyranny. Anyone who thought that the United States was there to bring democracy and bring human rights to the people of Iraq now has very graphic and brutal proof that that's not what the U.S. occupation is about. And in the images from Abu Ghraib prison, we see that the United States occupation rests on brutality, rests on racism, rests on denial of human rights to the Iraqi people, such that now we have a majority in this country that are beginning to question this war profoundly and considering that the United States should leave, and in fact leave now. So if the war was not for the stated reasons, what was it for? And if I had to put it crudely, so to speak, I would say it's not about TWT, but it was about OIL. And remember that the war was originally going to be called Operation Iraqi Liberation. But amazingly enough, someone in the Pentagon figured out that maybe they shouldn't have the word oil associated with the operation. So it became Operation Iraqi Freedom. We see exactly what that freedom looks like. Now, when I say it's about oil, I want to be clear what I mean, because that's not a simplistic or reductive answer. I don't mean that the United States went to war with Iraq so that we could drive our SUVs and have gas that was a little bit cheaper at the pump. That is not my argument. My argument is that oil is a central component of the U.S. drive to be a global hegemonic power, and that because oil plays such a vital role in the world capitalist economy, control over oil gives the United States political power, strategic power, military power, economic power vis-a-vis its competitors, whether they consider themselves allies, like some of the European countries that think of themselves as friends of the United States, or whether they're more explicitly seen as strategic competitors of the United States, like China. My argument is that the war was not about any of the stated reasons, but it was about reasons of oil and empire. The goal was to take advantage of the political moment of September 11th to advance an offensive strategy in the guise of defense. The United States government understood that it had a window of opportunity. That's how people in the Bush administration described it. Condoleezza Rice described it as a moment in which the tectonic plates of geopolitics were shifting, and they had to, in essence, achieve as many of their aims as they could achieve quickly before the balance of power shifted in someone else's favor. If you look at the National Security Strategy document of the United States that was issued in September of 2002, I urge you all to take a look at it. It's on the White House website. This isn't, you know, you used to have to wait for things to be declassified, you know, to read, like we're reading in today's or yesterday's papers about the discussions between Nixon and Kissinger about their glee at the coup in Chile. You used to have to wait a while to get some of that information. Now it's posted on the White House website. They've done us a service. We should look at this document, use it to expose what this war is really about. Condoleezza Rice, the other people involved in the writing of this document, describe September 11th, the horrific events of September 11th, which all of us understood to be a tragedy. They describe it as an opportunity. That's the exact word, an opportunity to advance an agenda that they had long before September 11th, which is how does the United States secure a gap between itself and any peer competitor, any other country, which no country can make up, so that the U.S. will be a global hegemonic power without any serious rival. And the United States is central the Middle East is central to that project of the United States because it is an area that has two-thirds of the world's oil reserves. Iraq has the world's second largest oil reserves. So when they say that this is not about oil, it lacks any credibility whatsoever. You can't talk about what's happening in Iraq today without understanding where Iraq fits into the world economy. And so the goal, and as Dilip pointed out last night, it started even before the United States was finished with its operation in Afghanistan. The goal was to eliminate a factor of instability in the Middle East, to topple Saddam Hussein, and to impose a regime in Iraq that would be quote-unquote stable. What does that mean? Friendly to the West, pro-Western, ideally with someone who was a U.S. Quisling, maintaining stability in the country, and ensuring that Iraqi oil flowed into the world market on terms favorable to the United States. And their goal was to use that not as an end in itself, but as a launching ground to achieving broader transformation in the region that would be favorable to U.S. interests. So in the words of David Frum right before the war, he said, "An American-led overthrow of Saddam Hussein and the replacement of the radical Ba'athist dictatorship with a new government more closely aligned with the United States would put America more wholly in charge of the region than any power since the Ottomans." Yeah. I think that sums it up. And remember, they were very clear that this isn't just about Baghdad. Baghdad is just the beginning. One pair of neoconservative pundits, William Kristol and Lawrence Kaplan, put it this way. They said, "The mission begins in Baghdad, but it does not end there. Were the U.S. to retreat after victory into complacency, new dangers would soon arise. War in Iraq represents but the first installment." The New York Times described the war this way. "It's part of a declared strategy to consolidate the Allied victory in Iraq by beginning to reshape the Middle East in U.S. interests." And they quote an unnamed senior administration official, "The swiftness of the victory in Iraq opens all sorts of new opportunities for us." Again, opportunities. But it's very important. We have to say how quickly things can change. And obviously, the scenario that we were given for what the United States would be able to achieve and what has happened are profoundly at odds. The Iraqi people have resisted the occupation and invasion of their country, and they've entirely changed the equation for the United States. The lack of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, the exposure of the crimes in Abu Ghraib, the reality of what this occupation looks like, the fact that more than a year after George Bush declared victory, soldiers are still dying in Iraq, has created an enormous contradiction for the Bush administration. And all of the rhetoric about going on to Iran, going on to Syria, the threats that we were hearing immediately after the war and the hubris of the U.S. that it was able to militarily defeat a country which had been bled dry for 20 years during the Iran-Iraq war, during the sanctions, during the Gulf War bombing, during the bombing intermittently during the years of sanctions. You know, the idea that that military victory would translate immediately into political victory didn't happen. The U.S. troops were not greeted as we were promised by the Iraqi exiles, and then as it was echoed by U.S. administration officials, with sweets and flowers. That was literally the language used to describe how Iraqis would greet the occupation of their country. And so the situation has changed. And I think we're now in a crucial political moment. A majority of people in this country is now questioning this war, questioning this occupation. So many of the lies of this government have been exposed. And I think it's very important for us to recognize that we're in a situation where a lot is at stake for the United States in the current situation in Iraq. They have pinned so many hopes on regime change in Iraq, and the rhetoric was so high that at the same time as there's a contradiction between what they promised and what's now happening on the ground, they feel a lot is at stake, that the credibility of U.S. imperialism is at stake in Iraq. And so therefore, we face a very tough battle. I think we have to be very clear about that. They are not, for them, For people in Washington, there's a lot more at stake in Iraq than there was in Vietnam in terms of the geostrategic importance, the geopolitical importance of creating at least the illusion of victory in Iraq. And I also think we have to be clear that this is a bipartisan consensus, that there's not disagreement between any of the wings of the main official parties in Washington over the overall project. The debate right now is over how best to achieve that project. To what extent do we use preemptive strikes? To what extent do we go unilaterally? To what extent do we create a fig leaf of multinationalism and use institutions like NATO and the United Nations? That's where the debate is at. And I was struck by something Dilip said last night about how right now the fig leaf has been taken off of all of the reasons George Bush was giving to cover up what this war was really about. And in many ways, I think what's going on right now is that the so-called opposition is trying to put the fig leaf back on. They're trying to come up with a cover. And if you look at the United Nations role, remember, we were told the United Nations is irrelevant. We're going to go around the United Nations. There'll be a more robust victory if the United States goes in without UN support. Now they're having to backtrack, go to the United Nations. But look at the UN resolution. It's a brilliant catch-22. They're going to create a situation where the U.S. is going to be able to use its veto power on the Security Council to prevent the withdrawal of so-called multinational troops. That's the situation they're trying to set up through the United Nations. So I think we've got to change the framework a little bit and say that it's not just that the emperor has no clothes, but that the empire has no clothes. And we have to take advantage of this political moment to expose U.S. empire. What is at stake for the United States in the Middle East? Why the U.S. has spent decades trying to secure Middle Eastern oil reserves? And why that agenda is not only fundamentally at odds with the interests of people in the region, at odds with the people of Iraq, at odds with the goal of seeing democracy and any kind of secular democracy in Iraq or in the broader region, but why that agenda is also fundamentally opposed to our interests here at home. How they're bleeding our schools, bleeding our hospitals, bleeding our communities in order to fund this unjust war, which doesn't benefit us, but only benefits a teeny minority. And I think right now, as organizers against this war, we have a lot of responsibility to carry that message to as many people as we can.
Thank you very much, Anthony, and thank you for nailing that right on 15 minutes. That was great.